Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 27th of July 2014. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Webcow Girl, Gareth James and Johnny Fox. We're now going to talk about Forbidden Broadway, which is billed as being an unstoppable force in New York since 1982. It is a review where they take the mickey out of Broadway shows. Well, that's how it works on Broadway. Of course, this isn't Broadway, so they're taking out the mickey out of West End shows. Web Cowgirl, tell me more about it and what you thought of it.
I had the good fortune to actually see this in New York about 8 years ago. And at the time, because I obviously wasn't living in New York and going to see everything that was on, a lot of the jokes sailed right over my head. This time, however, seeing a show being done with sort of a more local humor, now that I'm deeply buried in the theater scene, I pretty much spent the evening laughing my head off. And I'm really glad that they've decided to transport this show over to the other huge capital of English language theater. It's the second time I think that it's been at the Meunier, and they have decidedly updated the production. It does still have a, I think, very New York-esque flair to some of the numbers, so not entirely original and not entirely embedded in the local scene. But if you go to shows every night and frequently wind up walking home going, what were they thinking when they put that on, then you are going to love Forbidden Broadway because it is really just very fun. And this year they give the pajama game a hard time and also have some things to say about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory that I thought were right on the number. But you don't actually have to be familiar with all the shows that they're doing to be able to laugh at them. One of the pieces they did was about Once, and the song was talking about basically the plot holes in that show. Now, I've never seen it before, but I was still able to thoroughly enjoy this number because even though I maybe didn't recognize the similarities between the songs that they were singing and the music in Once, still, if somebody's Polish mother suddenly starts up doing river dance, well, that's just funny. You can recognize the incongruity there. And I do feel just a little bit like I may have been warned off of the show because that's the kind of thing that actually really irritates me in shows. And one of the things that is so enjoyable about Forbidden Broadway is the fact that the things that they mock are frequently not things that are particularly specific to any one show, but things that are a problem throughout productions. My very favorite number of the whole thing was a piece that sort of seemed like it was maybe teasing Angela Lansbury for choosing to appear in basically a sort of side role in Blithe Spirit when she has so much talent that you think she could really have her pick of what she wants to do. And as she did the song in character of her role as the medium of Blithe Spirit, and said that if she was going to be in a new production, she would go beyond the grave to find talent that could actually do a show that was worth being in. And I thought that was just brilliant. It was really, really great. And because it's at the Meunier, the tickets really aren't that expensive. The problem of ticket prices being another one of the things that they make fun of. And I thought that for big fans of the West End or of theater in London in general, this is the show with the jokes that for once you're going to be guaranteed to get every single one. Gareth, what do you think?
Sorry, Webcow. No, I very much agree with you. I think, though, that you probably do have to be a lover of musicals, and I do think you have to have seen a fair few of them to appreciate the show, because I think that's actually, otherwise you wouldn't recognize an awful lot of them. I did see this previous incarnation in the UK 4 or 5 years ago, and I thought this second time round was a lot better. And I think that might be down to the four performers, because I thought Anna Jane Casey and Sophie Lewis-Dan and the two chaps, Damien Humbley and Ben Lewis were all outstanding. And I think that could be the reason why the second incarnation was so much better. For me, the highlight was, believe it or not, the old warhorse Les Mis, because it's amazing how many laughs you can get from a revolve, or in this case, a non-existent revolve. I thought that Miss Saigon, The Book of Mormon, and Once were also huge fun, and I think they're also the most biting. And there's a lovely, they've turned the title song of Sondheim's Into the Woods into the words, which is performers kind of talking about how challenging it is to sing Sondheim, which I also thought was very clever. And outside the parodies of shows, there are some song, well, parodies of performers, I guess, really. And there's a particularly good song duel between the two ladies as Rita Moreno and Cheetah Riviera, which I thought was fabulous. I do think if you like musicals and you know a lot of these musicals, you know, you can't not like this. It's just an awful lot of fun. And I think even, you know, you have to accept that some of your favourite shows are going to be mercilessly treated as well. So you have to have a little bit of a thick skin, I suppose. The night I went, there was a sort of unscheduled stop about 50 minutes in. There was a 35-minute technical stop, but it didn't actually destroy the flow of things that much. It didn't dampen the sort of fun that we were going to have. The one thing I would say about the show is maybe they need to rethink the title, because actually of the 13 shows that were parodied here, 11 of them are either currently running in the West End, or well, 11 are running in the West End, and one's recently departed from the West End. And this apparently is the same show on both sides of the Atlantic. And indeed, six of these musicals started out in the West End and then went to Broadway. So I think it's kind of forbidden musicals, really. I think it's, you know, Broadway and the West End do share an awful lot of musicals. Some originate here, some originate there. And this guy sort of quite cleverly parodied musicals. But it's not for me Broadway musicals, it's musicals. Because I think that they have become a kind of transatlantic art form, really. But if you can get a ticket and you like musicals, I think it's a must, really. And it's certainly a better show second time round than it was first time round, and to be recommended.
I think it's the perfect thing for the summer doldrums when absolutely nothing new is on and requires a large glass of white wine.
We're now going to talk about This Was a Man at the Finborough Theatre. This is Noel Coward's 1925 play, which actually hasn't been performed in Britain, well, since it was put forward to the Lord Chamberlain in 1925 and rejected, essentially. It is a tale of adultery, and it's rather odd that it's been neglected. Well, look, I'm not so certain it is that odd once we've seen it. This production is directed by the actress Belinda Lang and stars Jamie De Courcy, Dorothy Amaya Bennett and Robert Portal in the main roles. And also Georgina Rylance is another one of the characters. The idea in this play is that we have Edward Chert, who is a successful society painter in the 1920s. His wife is unfaithful to him. We discover this in the first few minutes of the play when he is in his studio and his wife walks in with one of her boyfriends and they are kissing passionately and that sort of thing. He really decides to ignore it and decides not to do anything about it. But he's not the only person who's noticed her infidelity, and his best friend decides that he will sort the woman out and have a word with her. And we get a scene where he invites her to dinner and it doesn't go quite as he planned, because she's quite adept at taking men in, which is part of her charm. And it's a rather interesting play. I thought I could see why it hasn't been done before. I mean, this is a decent production. It's well put together, and it's a nice small-scale production. And I don't think you could make it that much better if you sort of threw lots and lots of money and lots of stars at it. It's not something like After the Party, which really that helped build that play when they did it at the National. That sort of really made people realise how good a play it is. I don't think this is a good enough play to really merit a sort of people throwing money and a lot of talent at it. This production is a good production, and it doesn't, and you don't feel that the play quite deserves it that much. It's not very good, Noel Coward. I mean, it's not at all bad. It's a sort of well-made play, well put together, but it doesn't sparkle. It doesn't shock in the way that his earlier play, The Vortex, did. This is sort of somebody just showing a slice of life, And it's of interest, especially if you want to collect all the Nail Cards and you want to see every Nail Card at some point. So it's a fascinating play from that point of view, but I'm not sure that it's a really great play. What do you think about it, Gareth?
No, I think it's not a great Noah Coward play. I do think it gets a great production, though. I do think the production would be hard to better. And I think all credit to the Finborough for giving us an opportunity to see it. It isn't actually the first production in the UK, though. It's the first professional production, because they did actually give it an outing for an amateur production at, I think, the Tower Theatre some time ago. But when it was banned in 1925, to show how more prudish Britain was to the rest of the world, it did actually get productions in the US, in France, in Germany, in Switzerland, in Belgium, in the Netherlands, in Egypt, and also in South America. So it was really just here where we had this ridiculous Lord Chamberlain censorship. It was only here that it didn't get performed. And I agree with you. I think it's a surprise we haven't seen it since. So thank you very much, Finborough. I think, to be honest, even if you went to see a play not knowing who the playwright was, you would know it was a Coward play, because sometimes it sort of almost seems like a parody of Coward. It's all cads and bounders and cocktails and cigarettes and everybody's darling. So it's, it is the world of the upper middle class, and as you say, it revolves around this portrait painter. He's, interestingly enough, seems to be the only one who works. Everybody else is kind of visiting each other, drinking, gossiping, travelling, having lunch, playing mahjong and doing all those sort of things, really. I think the flaw in the play is the middle act. So it's a three-act play, and in the middle act, Shirt's friend and his wife are together at his friend's house, where he's confronting her and her infidelity. And I think that's where the play goes wrong for me, because I think that particular act is too long and doesn't entirely make sense. And I think that could be the big flaw in the play. I think the design, Simon Kenny's design, was very simple but very elegant and very evocative kind of period set, a sort of 20s, 30s period set, is exceptional. And there are brilliant costumes. I mean, really, really excellent costumes. So in all respects of production values, this is up there with West End theatre. And I did like the three leads. I did like Jamie DeCourcy, Dorothy Meyer Bennett and Robert Portal, as you said. But I do think that Georgina Rylance kind of stole the show for me. I don't know whether she is a relation to any other Rylance, but, this character of High School Zoe, I thought she absolutely nailed. And I really, really liked that performance. The night before I went to see this, I went to see Porgy and Bess, which actually was put on 10 years later, but it's significantly more racy. And I don't know whether that was banned in the UK, but I mean, that sort of got, drugs and sex and everything. So, the two side by side on consecutive nights was interesting because this Porgy and Bess was so much more likely to be banned than this was. I mean, it's not shocking now, and I really can't see how it was shocking at the time, because the Vortex that you mentioned was significantly more shocking, I think, than this. So it's, if you're interested in 20th century theatre, and in particular if you're interested in Noel Coward, I think it's something you have to go and see, and another gold star for the Finborough, really.
One of the things that I did notice is something about Noel Coward. He seems to have, in his first acts, he seems to have a crowd in there, and then he'll just get it down to only a few people. You often get this crowd where people stand around being waspish. That, I think, is one of the reasons it didn't zing for me, because that bit wasn't sort of waspish enough. I thought of it as first act room meet, I think, is almost a phrase that just sprung into my mind when I was watching it. That was felt underdone, but it's not the fault of the production. It is the fault of the play, I think. But yes, as you say, that middle act, I mean, it was certainly good to see. I like Robert Portal, and it's good to see him doing his stuff, but it was a bit overlong, as you said. We're now going to talk about The Importance of Being Earnest, which is at the Harold Pinter Theatre. It's directed by Lucy Bailey, and it's a bit of an oddity, really. About 32 years ago, the National Theatre did a production of The Importance of Being Earnest, directed by Peter Hall. It starred Martin Jarvis and Nigel Havers as Jack Worthing and Algernon Moncrief, respectively, together with a Judy Dench as, I understand, a very memorable Lady Bracknell. The production was very well received, and Nigel Havers said in an interview that he and Martin Jarvis had always joked about revisiting their roles at some later date. And this appears to be what has happened. Lucy Bailey has assembled a rather superannuated cast, shall we say, to go along with Nigel Havers and Martin Jarvis. So we have Rosalind Ayres, Niall Buggy, Christine Kavner and Sherry Lungi as Cecily and Gwendolyn, respectively, and the redoubtable Sean Phillips as Lady Bracknell. And in order to take this sort of older cast and make it work, Lucy Bailey has got Simon Brett to write a framing device. So what we have is a play that starts in the upmarket drawing room of an old married couple who are part of a amateur dramatics company called the Bunbury Players. So we get a little bit of this story of the Bunbury Players, how they've done this play every 5 years or so for the last 30-odd years. And they're about to roll it out again to their, no doubt, adoring fans. So they're just sort of running through a final dress rehearsal before they move into the theatre and start to sort of pacing it out there. And it's a very odd thing, because when this framing device, you would expect to impinge itself on the play, and actually it doesn't. It's almost as if Lucy Bailey has, I don't know if it's lost faith with the framing device, or just sort of been rather scared of it, because actually it diminishes more and more and more, and in probably the second act it isn't there at all, and what you get is a fairly straight version of Importance of Being Earnest. And in fact, I quite liked it, the actual Importance of Being Earnest bit. I thought it was done rather well, that these people, certainly people who are very comfortable with the language, very comfortable with the roles, I think people might complain that, you know, they might be sending it up a bit, or then, you know, they're not taking it seriously, but they're certainly having a bit of fun with it. And I thought that some of the lines, actually, I've seen this play, what, half a dozen times now, and I thought actually some of these lines just jumped out at me in a way that they never have done before, and you really got the sense of the way that Oscar Wilde was sending people up in the wonderful way that he does. And I've never quite got that before, because I've perhaps been concentrating too much on the love story that's going on. And of course, there's no love story going on here. They're basically doing a rather skilled reading of it, and I think that's what you get. But I don't know that that's enough for the West End, quite honestly. And it is this framing device that it makes it all mysterious, and also this just getting together this cast. It seems to be such a weirdly conceived effort, and I mean, certainly not being particularly well reviewed by quite a lot of reviewers. I mean, there are some reviewers who have forgiven the framing device and thought that the play was fairly well done after that. But if you don't forgive the framing device, then you simply won't like this play, and you're just going to sit there thinking, why? But also the idea of having Simon Brett, I mean, that showed a little bit of promise when I first heard about it, because of course he's written novels with a character called Charles Paris, who's a great ham actor. Well, I don't know, ham actor, but he's a sort of a jobbing actor who always seems to get jobs. And it would have been quite good fun to have sort of Simon Brett pulling something like Akeborn's Chorus of Disapproval, where he has an almost semi Charles Paris story involved in The Importance of Being Earnest. But I think they respect Importance of Being Earnest far too much to play with it, although they just felt they needed to, just to excuse the old age of the actors. What do you think about it, John?
I love the idea that this should be a Charles Paris novel, because Simon Brett is a mystery writer. Obviously, I knew about his background, and I thought that when they rang him up and said, would you like to rewrite Oscar Wilde, apart from the fact that he needed to get over a certain bit of vanity to do that, I wondered if he was doing it as a way of gathering material for a new novel, which is, what is the mystery behind anyone putting on this extraordinary production? And then he'd just have to choose which one to kill. And I could give him quite a long list. And I would certainly start with Lucy Bailey, because her corruption of both the production of an Oscar Wilde and this really terrible cod version of, as you say, Chorus of Disapproval or something like that is banal. The other thing it struck me as if it should have been like is Curtains, the Candor and Ebb musical, where the policeman who arrives to solve a murder on the plot eventually fixes what's wrong with the play in an out-of-town tryout. There are so many more meta-theatrical devices you could have applied over this to make it better. Why, for example, if you're going to have actors who are well into their 70s, and I think Sean Phillips almost 90s. Is it not set in an old people's home? You know, there's a vogue for this sort of thing, isn't there? There's, you know, best exotic marigold hotel. They could have been in an old folks' home and putting on an amateur dramatic production, which I think would have given more variety in the banter and the backgrounding, because all that happens is you just get 10 minutes of, whoops, my costume has split, and, oh dear, there aren't any cucumber sandwiches, there are cucumber sandwiches. It's the sardine plate from Noises Off, without any of the cleverness of Noises Off. It just isn't... I'm sorry, the sardines come from Bedroom Fast, don't they? No.
Both.
All right. Well, it's a sardine plates from either Bedroom Fast.
I think it might be Pilchards, though. They want sardines, but they have to have settled for Pilchards in Bedroom Fast.
All right. Right. I was right in the first place. I mean, it is a sardine plate from Bedroom Fast that appears and doesn't appear and is forgotten and is remembered at the wrong time. That is just not clever enough, because it doesn't have all that kind of wonderful cardboard structure, nor does it have the strength of argument between the personalities that you read in Bedroom Farce and then see acted out through gritted teeth on stage. There's a little glancing reference to the fact that maybe Nigel Havers has slept with all the women in the company at some point during the 20 years he's been doing this. But it's only a frisson, and there is no revenge, and there is no... there is nothing. As you have said, the metatheatrical device melts away. Now, that I do think is deliberate. I think it's you know, it's like the fat in a grilled steak, that, you know, you see it there at the beginning, and then by the time you're eating the thing, all you're eating is actually the steak. And I don't know whether that's good or not, because the company don't seem to be able to decide by the time we get to the second act, where everything is done fairly straight, whether they are divided. There are some of them who are still sending it up. Cherry Lungi, Christine Kavanagh, and I would say Nigel Havers are playing it to the rafters, chewing the scenery, overacting their knickers off, although just maybe the way Nigel Havers works. Whereas Rosalind Ayres, in what I think is a pretty good Miss Prism, and Sean Phillips, who, for all I don't really like her inflections, is very strong and really quite convincing as Lady Bracknell. It's a performance of Lady Bracknell you would see in Windsor or Richmond or somewhere like that, and the audience will be falling in the aisles, and it will be entirely appropriate. Not sure it's right for the West End, but the point I'm making is that she and Rosalind Ayres are playing this fairly straight, and some of the other people are still attending to the metatheatrical device and sending it up. So which is right? What are we supposed to do? So I began to watch the audience, and the audience seemed to be composed of a lot of older people who must have seen this play at least as many times as you and I have, and it would be fair only as a kind of point of information to point out that I was the very best 12-year-old Gwendolyn Fairfax of my generation when we did it at school. So I'm pretty familiar with it. And there must have been a lot of people in the same situation. But there were also possibly tourist and tele-audience people who had come to see some of the characters for whom the importance of being earnest was new. And when the issue of the handbag comes round and they realise that the baby that Miss Prism abandoned is actually Jack Worthing, there was an enormous wave of, oh, surprise in the theatre, which you just don't expect to get with the importance of being honest, which suggests to me that actually what works is the 1896 Oscar Wilde play, not anything that has been applied over and round it since. The only thing that was applied over and round it that I really, really liked was the lovely Art Deco house set. I thought it was beautiful and you know, so perfectly nostalgic for a different era of drawing room comedy, that it had a charm all of its own. But the production doesn't, and I really cannot understand why anybody should be doing this, and also why it should be have been directed with such a light hand, unless Lucy Bailey feels she can't tell people of this calibre what to do. But somebody needs to, because you have this great unevenness. You have Martin Jarvis whirling about the stage with a sort of arthritic bounce that makes him look as if he's on a cocktail of, I don't know, self-indulgence and He really looks as if he ought to be strapped to a trolley in the inner corridor of the Maudsley. He's just so close to bonkers. And the other people aren't. He's meant to be the director as well, so theatrically he's supposed to be getting very agitated. There's also a very crude device where, because this thing is being... It's supposed to be the dress rehearsal, and it's in Sean Phillips' character's home, in her drawing room. So when the men serve themselves to whiskey, it's real, and so they get very slightly drunk. But they haven't; they're completely sober again by the second act, so there's no reality or accuracy in that. It's just a bit of a mess, really. It must, however, be quite an expensive production, and I'm sorry I don't know who the producers are, because I'm interested to know how they can potentially... be happy to lose quite so much money on it, because for sure these people don't work for equity minimum, and it's a turkey. It's a turkey of enormous proportions. It's also a curious piece of timing, because aren't we about to get a proper revival of The Importance of Being Honest with David Suchet playing Lady Bracknell, which is due in the West End about 10 or 12 months from now? So foreshadowing that may, and maybe it'll steal a bit of its audience, people who want to see a TV star and The Importance of Being Earnest. But I just didn't get why these 70s and 80s TV personalities were being forced into this bizarre revival without any great profit for either the producer or, worst of all, for the audience.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.